accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Volk takes a pass right up the middle of the ice at center with speed. Across the line, drops it there, and a shot squeezed off. Out in front of shot, they score! It's 4-0 Hurricanes.
With that goal by Justin Falk at the 10:04 mark of the first period, the Carolina Hurricanes took a 4-0 lead on your Winnipeg Jets. That proved to be the game-winning goal as the Hurricanes defeated the Jets by a 5-3 margin last night at MTS Center. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, Universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Gentlemen, the score is much more flattering than the results were on the ice. Anytime you go down 4-0 at home within the first 10 minutes of the contest, everything else that happens in that game is simply window dressing. And there's, I mean, I'm struggling to think of any legitimate excuse at all for a Jets team that was rested. They hadn't played since Tuesday, so they had 2 days off, to be that flat and that poor in front of a hometown crowd last night at MTS Center.
You're right, Drew. Good morning, boys. You're looking at a Winnipeg Jets team right now that's healthy as well, mm-hmm. right? You said well-rested, Drew, and you're right. But it was a team that, with the exception of Andre Pavlik, right now they're relatively healthy. And, you know, Phil DiGiuseppe gets the scoring going early for the Carolina Hurricanes. And 4.5 minutes into the game, guys, it's already 3-0 Hurricanes. You just can't gift a team a 3-goal lead in the NHL in the first period. It doesn't matter if it's the Carolina Hurricanes, Richie. It doesn't matter if it's the Washington Capitals. You just can't do that. And I thought that the Winnipeg Jets looked completely discombobulated in the first period. When they went down 3-0, and then Michael Hutchinson came in for Connor Hellebuck. And by the way, I don't think Connor Hellebuck deserves any type of criticism right now. The Winnipeg Jets were simply not good enough in front of him.
And he wasn't good either yesterday.
Wasn't good, Rich, but you know, I think people are starting to talk about how Connor Hellebuck has started 12 games in a row, and you know, Paul Maurice maybe should have gone with Michael Hutchinson against the Hurricanes, knowing that there's a second game coming up. I just don't buy that. I think he's going to put, you know, the goalie that gives him the best chance to win, Rich. I mean, the Jets, let's be honest, they fell asleep here in the first period. They weren't good in their own zone. They give up a power play goal in the first period. They just weren't very good. And the Jets, as you mentioned, Drew, are in a position where they have to get as many points as they can here, especially at home. They've only won one of their last six at home. It's just not good enough. So it was an extremely disappointing effort in front of the Friday night crowd.
I mean, you go through the goals last night, and that's got to be the frustrating part. As to who's to blame, you know, pinches, giving up the blue line on Falk's goal that you just heard Paul Edmonds call, Byfuglien, in my mind, losing Falk on that play, Burmistrov completely turning the puck over in the offensive zone, then blowing his defensive coverage on the way back. You had Perreault turning it over, moving to the middle of the ice into a trap in the defensive zone and turning that puck over. And then Anstrom not able to react quick enough. I mean, who didn't make a mistake last night on the Jets defensively? And Hellebuck wasn't very good. Again, 3 goals, 6 shots. The whole team was poor. There was no energy and no life in the first period. And yeah, they came back. You know, there's two ways to do it. One was the Nashville game where you just completely do nothing and you lose 7-0, whatever the final was in that game.
7-0.
And the alternative is you push back and you show you have some self respect, which they did. Certainly it's better than nothing, but if it's a must-win game, and every game's a must-win game now, if you think you have any chance of making it, and we don't really think they do, you got to bring something other than that against the Carolina team that's overachieved this year and give them credit, coming up over from Calgary. There's simply no excuses. The game was just dreadful in that first period. And the penalties, you know, everybody wants to talk all about Dustin Byfuglien and Andrew Ladd seems to be the whipping boy. Actually, that Ladd played a pretty good game yesterday. Dustin Byfuglien, you know, he got the third star of the game. He gets a goal and an assist. But I didn't think he played especially well at all. I mean, what about his penalty, his high sticking penalty in the first period? The first penalty he took was a delayed game. Carolina scored a goal.
Did you think that should have been a delayed game penalty?
Yeah, I didn't have an issue with it.
That was accidental. I think, Richie, to your point, the high-sticking penalty was worse.
Well, the high-sticking penalty was bad because he had position on Jay McClement, let Jay McClement get the puck off him, and Byfuglien, that never happens, Byfuglien. I mean, how does that happen? He's way bigger than him. McClement gets the puck off him, and then he high-sticks him, and then that's a penalty. I'm thinking to myself, like, And then he comes and he creates later, and obviously there's only a few defensemen in the league. I mean, second in NHL in goals for defensemen, and we know how skilled he is. But in a big game like this, he's roaming around the ice trying to create, but you need something better from him there. So, I mean, there's nobody goes without blame here as far as I'm concerned.
They actually gave that goal to Blake Wheeler later on, the
sure.
Byfuglien goal. But to your
whatever.
Point. Yeah,
I mean, he creates on the given goal you're talking about?
The given goal.
Well, he creates the whole play.
Well, and Richie, you know, you talk about the defensive coverage in their own zone. The first goal, as we mentioned, Matthew Perreault coughs up the puck, and Matthew Perreault has been very good for most of the season, but, you know, you can't make that type of play. And then Tobias Enstrom is just slow to react, just doesn't cover Phil DiGiuseppe. And then on the second goal, you know, Jordan Staal makes a nice little pass to Nestrosil, but then Burmistrov is just completely out of position.
Well,
like,
no,
not
I mean,
covering like, not covering Nestrosil well enough, certainly.
Well, it's an easy play, as you first saw. Two things. One is he turns the puck over in the offensive zone. Okay? Two is that he actually comes back, and he plays a pretty aware defensive game. It's a 3-on-3. He is above, meaning he is between Nestrosil and the net. And then he just starts watching the puck.
It's just not good enough. And, you know, you got to give the Carolina Hurricanes credit. I agree with Richie. This team is overachieved, right, guys? Like, we thought the Carolina Hurricanes were going to be in tough to make the playoffs. And
thought.
They still will
sure.
be because we expect them to make some moves before the trade deadline. I believe the Carolina Hurricanes have 8 pending UFAs. Mm-hmm. So they're going to move some players, and one of those might be their captain. But you got to give them credit here. But the way the Jets played defensively, I mean, they made it easy, I think, for the Carolina That's Hurricanes. Right. I mean, they just weren't good enough, flat
no
out. It's
no
simple. They weren't hard enough on the puck in their own zone. And, I mean, that for
in any zone.
What did they have, 4 shots in the first period?
5, I believe, is what it ended up.
And you know what? It was nice to see the Jets come back and make that game interesting. But at the end of the day, they didn't get any points. And at this point
That's
in the
right.
season, when you're trailing 6 other teams okay. in your division, it doesn't matter. You got to get points. You got to beat a Carolina Hurricanes team that you're better than. I mean, the Jets are a better team than the Hurricanes.
On paper, yeah.
I think the Jets right now are completely lost out there. I tweeted this last night, Drew. To me, they just look like a team that is...
Yeah, they're tied for last. They're tied for last in the league.
They just seem like a team with
no
direction.
30 teams, but...
And it's amazing to think that we're sitting here on February 6th, 51 games into the season, and the Jets are basically out of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have less than 10% chance, probably, of making the playoffs.
I think it would even be lower than that, but you're absolutely right. You know, what do you attribute the slow start to, or the non-existent start to the game? I mean, showing up after 20 minutes.
That's on the players and on the coaches. Let's be honest. I mean, mm-hmm. that's on everybody there. That's on the coach. Clearly doesn't have the team ready. And I know the players called a players-only meeting after the first period. And I always hate that after the fact. I mean, at this point in the season, it's way too late for that. 4-0 after. I mean, you already lost the game.
Everything you're doing after that's window dressing.
Well, I mean, it certainly doesn't help. And so it's on the players. It's on the coaches. I mean, it's on everybody. And you have to take the blame has to be there. So I'm not letting anybody off the hook, in my opinion. And I don't blame the players more than the coach. Everybody's not to blame.
You know, the three of us have watched almost every game over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And watching this team now, this is my own personal opinion. You guys may agree or disagree. To me, this just looks like a vulnerable team. It looks like a team that is just not confident in the way they're playing. And I think they're just much better than this.
Well,
I mean, you know, you talk about the Jets are, you know, towards the bottom of the standings. They're not that bad.
I agree with you.
They are not that bad. I mean, this team made the playoffs last year. I mean, this is just a group, I think, that...
And they're a solid, even strength team.
Has really low confidence. And they just look like a team that almost expects to lose.
That's right. That's fair. Yeah, you're right. It's for sure mental. I don't disagree. I mean, I know that their special teams is awful, and they just can't seem to play when it matters. You know, lock down games or do what you need to do to win. But, I mean, if you watch them just generally at 5-on-5 when they're altogether healthy, which, again, is rare in the league to have all of your guys going at one time, and they're not an ineffective bunch. So maybe long-term getting a high pick here, I don't think anybody disagrees, getting a high pick here helps. The problem is this, as far as I'm concerned, is if the manager and the management, if Kevin Cheveldayoff's goal here this year was to make the playoffs or at least be reasonably close to the playoffs, and he miscalculated that, and I mean, I thought they were going to make the playoffs, so hey, I'm putting myself there too. Mm-hmm. If he miscalculated that, his team by 13 to 14 spots in the NHL standings, should, you know, the benefit of getting that top pick should be no credit given to him for that.
It's not like it was a deliberate
thing. It's not like it was a plan.
Like the Edmonton Oilers thing where they thought they were going to compete for the playoffs and year in, year out, they were terrible.
I mean, that happened, yeah, at the beginning of it. It kind of happened with what Pat Quinn and the late Pat Quinn and Nikola Habibulin and such. But it's not like a Buffalo. It is what it is. I'm not condoning it, but it happens all the time. Buffalo last year and making a plan of, you know, trading for Evander Kane, for God's sake, who was injured for the year.
Sure.
To make sure they cemented a place at the end of the standings. I mean, this is a fall, and it's a fall, and it's not a fall with a Carey Price exception here. I mean, it's not like you lost the best player in your roster for 30, 40 games.
Right. They've been healthy for the most part. Best players have been in the lineup for all the games. So which takes me to my next question to you guys is, you know, you mentioned, you know, the I don't know if it's an apathy or a lack of confidence in the group. You know, if you know, is this something that's going to resolve itself when Bufflin and Ladd get resolved?
Well, it's too late anyways at that point.
I'm not talking about for this season. I'm talking about for next year. Or do you think that this carries over?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't carry over, Drew. I mean, who knows who the team is going to be in the offseason. I mean, in the next season. So I don't know. All I know is this, is if you want Andrew Ladd, and we discussed, you know, defending Andrew Ladd because he's getting a lot of criticism. I'm not his biggest fan, but I think he's a very good National Hockey League player who provides a lot of value to a roster. Andrew Ladd talked to the media last night. Andrew Ladd's the captain of the squad. I thought Andrew Ladd played a pretty good game, could have had 2 or 3 goals. Who did Andrew Ladd play with last night? Andrew Ladd played the majority of last night's game with Adam Lowry and Joel Armia, two players who were in the AHL, a month ago? Mm-hmm. And you're expecting your captain, top guy, one of your top guys playing for a contract who just given you 4.5 years of his career. And I know he gets compensated for it, don't get me wrong. But the idea that he is playing with these two guys in a contract year, and you need to win, and in a game you need to win. What does that say?
Are they sandbagging him?
I'm not saying that they're intentionally sandbagging him, but I mean, you're putting him in a position where you're kind of taking away his ability to lead. And I know coaches make decisions and managers that make decisions, and I don't think there's any kind of communication there between, you know, one to play and the other. But maybe the coach, he's falling out of favor, whatever it may be. But he is the guy you've relied on all this time. Mm-hmm. I mean, for Maurice, he's the captain, and you're throwing him out there with two guys who are not going to... I mean, Adam Lowry and Joel Armia are not going to be able to create offense, at least on a semi-consistent basis, for Andrew Ladd. So then you have your captain. I mean, you see it with Andrew Ferentz and different guys. When your captain isn't effective and he doesn't feel like he's contributing, he has a harder time leading because he doesn't feel like his actions back up his words.
And it's funny, Richie, because Ladd now has 2 goals in his last 2 games, and he hasn't been on the top line. And, you know, in Ladd's defense, you know, even if you have Mark Scheifele up with Blake Wheeler and Nikolai Ehlers, the so-called Schwielers line that you love so much, Drew.
Can't stand that.
And they switched the lines up a lot.
Sure.
After the Jets went down 3-0, but the point is, Rich.
And the defense pairing.
To back up your point, you expect Andrew Ladd at the very least to be on the second line in a top 6 role, not on the third line. And the third line is significant, not just because of the number. It's the situations he's going to be in, the amount of minutes he's going to get.
You could even split it up as he and drop one of Stafford or Perreault to play with him, and then you do a kind of top 9 scoring thing. Somebody who will create something and at least give him an idea of being a scoring line.
We're on the same page. I agree with you. I mean, I think that Andrew Ladd is... We said this on the NHL this week on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that Ladd's struggles have almost been a microcosm of the Jets' struggles.
Yeah.
I really believe that. I think he's the leader of the team, and I know over the years, especially in the first 3 years of the Jets being back, you know, Andrew Ladd, I think, was criticized quite a bit for his leadership. He wasn't criticized last year when he was leading the team in points and getting this team into the playoffs for the first time. I think he's a good leader, but to Richie's point, I don't know how much you can lead if you're not being put in those crucial situations. Last game against the Dallas Stars, he wasn't out there the last 2 minutes. You always expect Andrew Ladd to be out there the last couple minutes, just like you expect Jordan Staal and Eric Staal to be out there for the Hurricanes.
And even if you don't expect him to be out there, as you expect the coach to say something a little more politically correct. We talked about that on Wednesday, okay?
Protect him.
I mean, then you have this game, and this is that's who he's rolled out against. And I mean, rolled out with. And I just think that you look at this, you look at the season as a whole. I mean, it's completely coming apart. And again, we've talked about the fact that this is still being talked about this late in the season, and after having waited months and months and a year, even over a year, for this decision to be made. And you cannot tell me with a straight face that this has not had a bearing on the way the Jets have played.
We talked about in October, Drew. You know, was the Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien, were the contracts going to be a distraction? We kind of all agreed probably not early in the season, but if they're not signed into January and February, now we're into February and the Jets are way out of a playoff spot, how could it not be a distraction? I mean, now you don't know. You're looking down the bench. You don't know if Ladd's going to be there in a couple of weeks.
You know, I mean, you have to – Paul Maurice, to have the effective voice in the room, has been very close with the veterans, right? Like, he's really relied on them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what's happening there right now. I mean, because Andrew Ladd can't be happy with that situation. I know the players have their players only meeting after the first period and the coaches aren't in there. And I don't think there's any warning signs there to read into, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that would be jumping to conclusions. But that's stuff that needs to be rectified in the room or dealt with by transactions. But again, we keep saying things need to happen and nothing happens. So
exactly. Trade deadline, 23 days away. Something you'd think will happen by then. Let's head to break. When we come back, the Jets, the Moose, they're bottom feeders in both leagues. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes past 9 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
You know, I just thought of something, Drew. I haven't had an Illegal Curve sandwich in like 2 weeks.
Really?
Well, because there was raw almond the last couple of weekends.
Sure.
So we were out at the Forks.
With Bernstein's Deli, of course.
With Bernstein's Deli.
Yeah.
And it's weird because when that Illegal Curve sandwich dropped, I was having like at least two a week, maybe three,
and
maybe
four. Your cardiologist appreciated that. Anyways, welcome back to the program. We're going to continue on with our talk about the Jets, who with last night's defeat are now tied with, I guess, one, two, three, four other teams five other teams for dead last in the NHL with 47 points. The Jets not in last, as Columbus has played more games than everybody else, so they still reside in the basement. But point total-wise, the Jets are right down there at the bottom. Then you flip over and you look at the American Hockey League standings, and I think it's been well documented that the Manitoba Moose are the worst team in the AHL, and they are so by 3 points over the Iowa Wild. The Moose not averaging 2 goals a game. 87 goals for in 44 games played, which is sort of hard to believe in professional hockey, to be perfectly honest. So with the Jets at the bottom of the NHL standings and the Moose at the bottom of the AHL standings, I ask you guys, these awful seasons for both franchises, for the players on both teams, are there ramifications beyond this year? Or are they able to shake this off and get back to, you know, what they hope to be winning ways in future?
I mean, I don't think I would read too much into it. I know there's situations in Edmonton where it's just perpetual losing.
Mm-hmm.
You see a guy like McDavid is kind of able to have an effect in changing that. I don't really think there's too many long-term ramifications here, Drew. For the Jets, the Moose, I've seen him play. I've been to a couple games this year. I mean, they're clearly not a very good team. It's the Jets, you see potential of being a good team. The Moose, you don't really. Again, I don't go to every game by any means, but the games I've seen, I mean, there's an inability, as you note, to create offense. Their goaltending, I think, is in the few games I've seen, has been very good. But there's just a lack of talent. And the AHL is different than the NHL. Why? Because, I mean, the AHL veterans, if you want to pay for them, you can usually find them. And so I wouldn't read too much into that. The Jets seem to have more guys kind of coming through, and you wonder if they will play in that AHL, in the AHL, for the AHL team and how good they are. And there has been struggles with guys like Josh Morrissey and such, but I'm not sure how many long-term ramifications there are to the losing, to losing night in, night out. I will say the one thing about the Moose is how you do lose. And if you are, the goaltending, as I said, has been good. And sometimes it's, you know, it's like the QMJHL used to be, you play on teams that are opening up and then you get a lot of practice. That being said, for some forwards, some defense, you need to have them being able to create chances and gain some confidence to move up to the next level. So I'm not sure if that's a drafting thing. I haven't watched them enough, or, you know, filling it out with a veteran roster. But I don't think overall it's something to be overly concerned about. In terms of long-term ramifications, I'd be more concerned about, you know, putting the teams together and, you know, management-wise, especially the NHL levels, well, what are you expecting going forward here? Because if it's been like the past few years, 5 years really, mm-hmm. and we'll see what happens here with these two big guns, I mean, that's going to say a ton about their Kevin Chevalier's tenure.
Has he?
Well, it's a very difficult time right now for True North and the Jets and the Moose right now. I mean, both teams, as you mentioned, Drew, are struggling. And, you know, Rich talks about how the goaltending's been really good for both teams. And you're right. Eric Comrie wins the MVP at the All-Star game. Connor Hellebuck, you know, started 12 games in a row. He struggled a little bit here, but I mean, I think he's in the Calder conversation. Certainly, his numbers have been excellent.
Yeah, maybe he's not going to win, but yeah,
he won't win. But I mean, there's some
he'll
other.
He'll get some votes.
Yeah, but the point being, he's had a really nice rookie season.
For sure.
But you know, as far as the Moose go, I think the expectations were not very high for the Manitoba Moose, and I don't mean that with any disrespect. I mean, this is a very young team. You know, starting with the goalies. And there are a lot of first-year players. I mean, this is a very young team. You know, when you're talking about first-year players, I mean, you can start with Nick Petan. I mean, go down the lineup, Chase DeLeo. I mean, there are a lot of young players. And certain players, even with 2 or 3 years of AHL experience, I mean, that's not a lot. I mean, aside from, you know, Jay Harrison and, you know, Matt Halaschuk and Patrice Cormier, I mean, you just don't have a lot of veterans on that Moose team, and that's tough. I mean, the AHL is a veterans league. I mean, the teams that do well, you got to have your AHL veterans. You know, the Toronto Marlies are a good example. You look at the Marlies, they've
got a mix, right?
They've got a good mix. Sure, you're right. I mean, you don't want to just have an entire team of 31-year-olds.
I know what you mean.
But you can't have a team that, I mean, what's the average age of the Moose? 23? 24, 22?
I mean, I've been to a game where they played against the Marlies, and it was like men against boys, sure. And the Marlies didn't even have their top guys.
No, right. That was right after the World Juniors. They were still sitting up in the press box, but they haven't come back from Sweden or Finland or wherever it was.
Yeah. And Drew, this is part of there will be growing pains. Yeah. You know, St. John's Ice Caps, you know, this is the first year back in Winnipeg with an AHL team, and I think Keith McCambridge is an excellent coach.
Hold on.
I think he's done a great job.
Hold on a second about the transition. I mean, what's the transition? You owned the team beforehand. I mean, you ran the team beforehand, so yeah. There's no.
Well, I think transition in the personnel. I think there are obviously players that played for the Ice Caps that are playing for the Moose, but I think this is a transition year. And also something to factor in is a lot of the first, second round draft picks. Well, in Hellebuck's case, he's a fourth rounder. A lot of Jets prospects are in the NHL right now, right? The top prospects.
You're saying the guys that you would think would be leading Moose.
Right. Who would be on the Moose
if the Jets keeping them up? Nobody.
But I'm not. Well,
maybe like Armia, but Armia and Lowry? But Lowry played elite. I mean,
no, not Lowry. I mean, more so.
Oilers can't even play.
Hellebuck. But the point being that
guys,
the top prospects
still wouldn't be any good.
The top prospects in the organization are not in the AHL. Ehlers wouldn't be eligible for the AHL.
That's right.
But the point is, they just don't. A lot of their top prospects are not in the AHL. That's what my
point
is.
But Richard's point is that a lot of the top prospects aren't even AHL eligible right now, so that they wouldn't even be helping the Moose.
Well, we just mentioned, too, Connor Hellebuck and Joel Armia. I mean, those guys would help.
Sure, they would help. But if they played on the team, which they did, they still weren't any good.
Well, I don't think the Moose would be a top team in the AHL, but my point was that's also a factor that the Jets have gone younger. And sure, Nick Petan is maybe the exception. You know, he was with the Jets and went back to the AHL, but they have a shortage of not only veterans, but I think some of their top prospects. It's not a very good AHL team.
If one season here, Drew, of like really poor performance from both squads, I don't think is something to completely concerned about. If this continues,
if it's multiple years of losing,
I mean, then I think you have. I think you have an issue.
The Moose have one player in double digits in goals.
The other problem with the AHL, Drew, as opposed to the NHL, is the NHL gives you that huge benefit of being bad.
Sure. Which the AHL doesn't. Years from now, maybe that player, but generally speaking, if you're that bad, that player never even touches down in the AHL.
And the return of the Moose, guys, has been an excellent thing. I mean, the Moose are averaging, I believe they're top five in the entire AHL. I'd have to check that.
Yeah,
I saw that
in Gate, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
but it's not dependent on play. Like, the fans don't really seem to care too much about what's on the ice.
Well, you look at the scores. You look at the scores that the Moose are losing by, and they're not even competitive most nights. And I mean, a lot of these scores are even flattering because of the way that Eric Comrie has been playing. I mean, the game that we saw, the one Moose game I saw against Toronto, Eric Comrie, I mean, it should have been 12-0 if it wasn't for Eric Comrie. They lost badly. I mean, they lost 3-0 still. But it could have easily been, 6, 7, 8 goals against, and Eric Comrie stands on his head.
The truth is that you're not even mentioning this if the Jets are playing well.
100%. You're right, because if every single NHL city doesn't care about their AHL team unless both are doing poorly.
That's right.
Or one is doing, or the AHL is doing well.
No, or if one's poorly, the other one's dominating, and they think the future's coming.
I don't agree with that at all. I mean, I think there are.
If the Jets were in the top 10 in the league, you wouldn't bat an eye at the Moose.
Well, that's your opinion.
That is my opinion,
and I don't agree.
Okay.
I think there are people that care how both teams are doing. I think there are people. I think there are fans that have season tickets to the Jets and Moose, and they care.
Okay, we will agree to disagree on that one. I think that the parent club, from my opinion, is the one that matters most to the majority of fans. And good on you as for being the exception in that case.
No, I'm not the exception. I'm just saying you said nobody would care.
Maybe I shouldn't have spoken in such absolutes. Fair point.
And there's 7,000 or 8,000 people going to Moose games that I think care.
Okay. Let's head to break. When we come back, the latest on Ladd and Bufflin is Andrew Ladd bound for Broadway. And I mean in New York City. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This, of course, the theme music for Brett the Hitman Hart. And on behalf of Rich and Ez and everybody here in studio, we want to send our best wishes out to Hitman, who announced he's in a battle against cancer, and we have no doubts whatsoever that he will pin cancer and become champion again, 1, 2, 3, in the middle of the squared circle.
Stay strong, Hitman. Best there ever was, the best there ever there
best
ever there, will be.
The yeah. best there ever is, the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. Is that right? I think so. Anyways, welcome back to the program. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. The sagas of Ladd and Bufflin continue unabated, at least for another 23 days before the February 29th NHL trade deadline. This from Larry Brooks of the New York Post, quote, "Winnipeg has been scouting the Rangers for a while, And yes, indeed, Andrew Ladd would sure look good wearing the blue shirt for the stretch run and into the playoffs. Surely the Jets would be willing to take some combination of JT Miller, Pavel Buchnevich, a first-rounder, and Ooh. Dylan McElreath off-Broadway in return for the high-end rental property. But even more surely, after going after what is left of the Blue Shirts' young core, would have to be told by Jeff Gorton that they jest and they should not waste their time. That last part more to do with the Rangers' plans for the future. But that package he mentions, those players he mentions, what if that is? Do you see the Andrew Ladd to the New York Rangers being a viable destination? And do the Rangers have the assets necessarily to make it get a deal done?
I mean, I guess they do. I don't really see Ladd as a fit for the Rangers. That's, I mean, what you have in New York, Drew, is you have a team that, to me, probably could use Bufflin more than Ladd. Right now, you have a guy, you know, you have Girardi, who, you know, the right side you want to solidify. You have the injury to Kevin Klein. Mm-hmm. You have the rumors of Keith Yandel. Well, I mean, who's playing on the back end there? So in my mind, that's probably the wrong target that Brooks is looking at. I also believe that while I think Andrew Ladd has value, certainly has value on the market. We talked about how, you know, he would be a great addition to many teams. I don't know how many, the combination of how many of those guys would be in a package there, but it certainly wouldn't be all. I mean, I like JT Miller's game. He plays a hard game. He goes to the net. He's certainly, to me, a top nine forward in the NHL. I think the question is it the third line or second line? But and McElrath is a you know, respectable kind of rugged bottom pairing guy. I don't know anything about the prospect in the first round pick there, but I mean, you're not getting a huge haul like that for about 2 months of Andrew Ladd when he's asking for big money on a team that is, you know, is always going to be spending it, but it certainly has to look at how they're going to spend it. I don't think it's going to be on Ladd on a go-forward basis. So I'm not so sure there's a ton to that.
Yeah, well, first of all, JT Miller's got 7 points in his last five games. Yes. He's got 16 yeah. goals. He's playing really well right now. McElrath is a Winnipeg boy. Mm-hmm. He's in his rookie year. He's having a good season for the Rangers. Big, towering defenseman, as Richie mentioned, physical defenseman, can chip in a little bit of offense. I agree with Rich, though. I mean, they're not getting a first-rounder, JT Miller, McElrath, and that prospect who I know nothing about.
He was a third-round pick of the Rangers back in 2013. He hasn't come over to North America yet. He's been playing in the
right.
KHL.
Right, so we can't comment on him, Drew, because we haven't seen him play. But, I mean, JT Miller, I mean, he would be a good player coming back the other way, Rich. I agree. I mean, is Andrew Ladd what
would you do that trade straight up, Izzy? I mean,
I'm not sure.
Are you saying you would?
I'm saying that's probably, like, I mean, if you talk about all those players, how much are they giving up for? Right now, JT Miller's outperforming Andrew Ladd. I mean, he has played well, actually, for an extended period of time here.
Remember, the Rangers have already given up a first rounder last year.
Yeah, this year's gone to Coyotes. Yeah.
And I mean, you know, even though the 2015 draft was considered one of the better drafts in recent memory, this 2016 draft with Austin Matthews and Matthew Tkachuk and Puljujärvi and Patrick Laine and Jacob Chychrun, I mean, they're talking about this draft being a really good one. This first-round pick would not be a top-five pick that would be coming back to the Jets.
Yeah.
But the point is, I mean, there's some good players deeper into that draft coming up here. And, I mean, back to Andrew Ladd and whether he'd be a fit with the Rangers. I mean, I've said this many times before. Andrew Ladd's a two-time cup winner who you can put out on the first line, second line, third line, whatever. He can play in all situations. So I think he could be a fit on any team. I mean,
yeah,
do the Rangers
sure,
need a player like Ladd as much as they need a player like Buff? I don't think so. I agree with you, Rich. I mean, that Rangers defense isn't as strong as it was when they went to the Stanley Cup Finals. I don't think. I mean, I think they could certainly use a guy like Buff to provide more offense.
You know, Boyle, Klein, you look at their right side. I mean, Girardi, that's where they want to improve as far as I'm concerned. So that would make more sense. And you look at the front end of the roster there, you still have a lot of guys with talent. I mean, you don't have the depth. We talked about that. And you haven't had seasons out of some of the guys that you expected. But I don't see them trading a 22-year-old winger who's a pending RFA mm-hmm. for a 30-year-old winger with less goals, who's a pending UFA. I mean, so I don't think you probably do that one for one if you're the Rangers right now. And then you look at the other combination of players we talked about. And this is the problem that you have when you get down to. People say, oh, the leverage, you get more leverage down to the deadline. You also have certain teams eliminated by many different factors. So I think the middle of the summer, the draft, is usually the best time to make those moves.
And there might be some legs to this, Drew. I mean, Larry Brooks, very well-connected guy.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, very good writer. Very specific players coming back the other way. And it makes sense. McElrath has got the Winnipeg ties. And that prospect, I mean, it would be weird that he would throw that prospect in without having some basis for that.
How many prospects do they have right now?
But, I mean, well, and Andrew Ladd.
Traded most of them away already.
Richie Ladd's been linked to Florida with the Dale Tallon connection. I mean, I think we'd all agree we don't expect Ladd to be traded within the Central Division. I don't think the Jets want to play Andrew Ladd five times a year.
Well, I mean, that's assuming he signed. You might be right about that, but if I'm Kevin Chevalier, I don't care where he goes. You get the best package possible.
Sure, especially because on July 1st he can sign, and he can sign in the Central Division if he wants to. I mean, there's nothing stopping from doing that. You don't care about the rest of this year because you're out of it. So, you know, exactly to your point, Richie, I mean, you take whatever you can get for Andrew Ladd, wherever it's coming from. I don't care if it's coming from the Chicago Blackhawks or, you know, the Minnesota Wild.
Well, I don't think he's going to take whatever he can get. I think he's going to wait and see.
You take the best offer you can get,
right,
is what I meant,
right,
obviously. Another report this coming from Nick Kyprios, and I will read it verbatim. It came out on Twitter last night. Quote, it's now a given that the Winnipeg Jets will offer Dustin Byfuglien the long-term contract they didn't want to in the summer. No reason this shouldn't get done, end quote. The thing that, you know, jumps out at me there is they haven't yet offered him a long-term contract. I mean, is it maybe?
That's what we thought, though, Drew, right? I mean, they were arguing over term. We suspected it was 4 or 5 years of the issue there. Maybe 5, 6 if you're.
But Richie, is that not
long-term?
Lengthy?
Well, I mean, the question is, you know, I mean, if it's that 1 year that you're having the issue over it. My question is not so much if they had offered him or not offered him. My question is, why has their perspective changed so much? What have you seen from Dustin Byfuglien? To me, he's been basically Dustin Byfuglien all year,
mm-hmm,
what he's been before. So what has changed? Has it been the lack of success in signing Ladd? Okay, fair enough. Like, but I would hope it's not some other reason that suddenly has changed your perspective on why you're making your decisions.
You're saying he's been the same player this year as he has been for much of the last 5 years here in Winnipeg.
He's got 16 goals now. He's second, yeah, to Brent,
sure,
Burns amongst
but,
all
but
defensemen.
But how different is he as a player?
Well, he gets 20 goals for you every year.
Like, how different is he as a player? I mean, Dustin Byfuglien is a really good player.
Byf is doing what Byf always does. I mean, he hits, he scores, he has an impact on the game pretty much every time he goes out there.
Mm-hmm.
He's a dominant player. And I agree with you, Rich. I don't know if much has changed. I mean, Byf has been valuable to this team from day one. Since the Atlanta Thrashers came over here, same thing goes for Andrew Ladd. I mean, Andrew Ladd has been a top,
mm-hmm,
player,
mm-hmm,
for the Winnipeg Jets as well. So, I mean, are we talking about 5 years or 6 years, as Rich mentions? I think we are. I think we'd be a little bit surprised if the Jets are offering Byf 7 or 8 years, because then that takes him into his late 30s. I've always thought that a good, you know, term would be 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite possible.
It's quite possible
that Byf wants that extra year, but not
I'm
surprised.
The Jets were locked in at 4, is he? That's what I would guess.
It's possible.
Well, I mean, it's amazing that yet again February 29th is coming up. It's 23 days away, and yet again we still continue to talk about this with the uncertainty surrounding both of these marquee players on the Winnipeg Jets.
And Drew, the light at the end of the tunnel is that the trade deadline, as you mentioned, is coming up in 3 weeks.
Thank God, almost. I mean, you know, how much more can be said about the saga and the fact that it's...
Drew, hold on. After the trade deadline, and this team's out of the playoffs,
what are we going to talk about?
It's
a fair point. I don't know. Really, really, really in-depth draft preview. That's what I would say about that point in time. Really, really in-depth.
Well, Drew, get on the road and start driving up the WHL trail, because we need you on the road to start scouting.
You just want to get rid of me. I'm surprised you guys aren't sending me to Finland to check out the two Finnish players who are just expected to be drafted up at
the
top.
We're going to send you to Siberia. Finland's not far enough away.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll go to preview tonight's Jets-Avalanche game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bar- far side now. It's controlled by Colorado. Play down low. Out in front of Gittler. Shot. He scores. Took a pass from Carl Soderberg and roofed it. It's a power play goal for Colorado, and it's 2-0 Avalanche.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jets and the Avalanche tonight, 9 p.m. here on this fine station as the Jets head to Denver for the, not quite the last back-to-back, but the last back-to-back that involves travel. They have one more back-to-back, I believe, at home in March between when they play at home on a Saturday and then on a Sunday. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Gentlemen, the Jets and the Avs. The Jets look for their first victory this season against the Avs. Oh, for their first three against a team that last year was not a playoff team in the Central Division or in the Western Conference. This year, the Colorado Avalanche, after a slow start, have significantly picked it up and currently reside in the first wild card spot in the Western Conference, 2 points up on the Nashville Predators, albeit the Predators with two games in hand. Jets and the Avs is, you know, we've seen the Avs a lot at this point. There's no real secrets to what they do. Just a matter of, you know, on the second half of a back-to-back, do you see the Jets being able to sort of fight through the adversity of last night's game, maybe pick up where they left off playing well for the final two periods?
All right, come on, I'm in.
What do you want from me?
Well, Drew,
what do you want from me, Richard?
Drew, no. I mean, the Jets have no choice. I mean, the Jets put up a stinker at the MTS Center last night, and they have no choice but to go into Colorado. By the way, I mean, they got into Colorado late. I mean, they probably, you know, hit the hay around 3 in the morning. So, I mean, they're not going to be the most well-rested bunch, Drew. But they have no choice.
It's a late game tonight, though.
It's a late game. So, I mean,
start in Denver.
That helps a little bit. But, you know, the altitude and everything like that is a factor, honestly. And, you know, the Jets, even though...
Save that for the pre- and post-game tonight, Ezzy.
Well, no, but even if the Jets are completely out of the playoff picture right now and a couple of points from the basement of the entire league, it's unbelievable that we're saying that. I mean, you still have to have a response and put together a good effort because they're still going to be battling here for a playoff spot, even if they look like they're mathematically almost out of it with 31 games left. I mean... You mentioned, Drew, that the Jets have lost all three games to the Avalanche, mm-hmm. which is in stark contrast to last year. If you guys remember, the Jets were very good against the Avalanche. I think they beat the Avalanche four times, if I'm not mistaken, last year. The Avalanche were a mess last year. You know, I was trying to tell Rich, it was, you know, middle of November, I believe, or early December, and the Avalanche looked like they were out of it. And I said to Richie, I mean, this Avalanche team, even though they've still got question marks on defense, Rich, and I'm not trying to say, you know, I told you so, but there's just...
I thought they were done. So
there's too much talent, Richie, with Nathan MacKinnon and Matt Duchene and Landeskog, and Iggy at the ripe old age of 38 is still putting the puck in the net. I mean, there's just too many dangerous offensive weapons, and, you know, Tyson Barry on the back end is a top offensive defenseman, and Varlamov has had a rebound year. Varlamov, Drew, a couple of years ago, I mean, he was putting up a Vezina type of season.
Sure.
And last year, with all the distractions and everything like that, I mean, he just wasn't the same goalie. So I think, you know, you got to give kudos to Patrick Waugh for turning this group around. Because when we saw this team earlier in the season, they were a pretty lackluster bunch. They just didn't look like a very good team. And I think they've put it together at the right time here.
Varlamov got the start in goal for the Avs today, his first start since January 23rd. So they get their number one goaltender back.
Carl Soderberg's been a really nice player for them. You know, he's really been trusted by Patrick Waugh in difficult situations, in all situations, really. And, you know, losing Ryan O'Reilly as part of that deal for Zadorov as the main piece back, you know, obviously that'll take time to figure out what happens in that move. But Soderberg's replaced O'Reilly especially well and played in all situations like O'Reilly, mm-hmm. and has been a pleasant surprise for them. So again, they're top heavy. We've talked about them. Chris Bigra on the back end, I think, helps and is helping and is improving in his development. I think that's helping solidify the back end. But this team isn't great by any means. But, you know, stats aside, and again, Patrick Waugh is going to tell you if they make the playoffs two of the past 3 years, he doesn't care. And, you know, in reality, I got to give Patrick Waugh a lot of credit here. And remember when we were talking about at the beginning of the season, you brought up, you know, is he his job in jeopardy?
Yeah.
Like, boy, it's nice to see this, you know, the management there and former teammate Joe Sakic sticking by him, which he should have, I think, and the right decision. And, you know, you talk all about Patrick Waugh and, you know, the stats aren't in their favor, the underlying stats, and they still are performing. I will tell you this. It's not like Patrick Waugh is saying, don't have the puck a lot. Patrick Waugh is saying, well, you gave me basically two lines, give or take, and not a great defense. And he's doing his best with it and doing a really nice job. So if they're able to crack the playoffs again, considering the fact that they really haven't had any depth behind since he's been there, I think give him full credit. And that's one of those jobs that you say, you know, regardless of what it is, he's got this team into a contention. And I realize most teams are in contention in the National Hockey League this day and age. But he never really gave up on the squad.
To your point about the underlying numbers, yeah. Richard, the reason you bring that up is, of course, the Avalanche have the worst Corsi in the NHL. Yep. And when they are, you know, when they are ahead, pardon me, when they are ahead or behind, so when they're either leading or when they're trailing,
yeah, less of the score effects is what you're saying.
Less of the score effects. Yes, they have the worst Fenwick in the league as well.
Drew, nobody cares about Corsi and Fenwick. Come on.
No, but
what are we talking about this garbage for?
The point is,
you just started. You're stirring up trouble now.
The point is that, I mean, regardless of that, and this team is in the playoffs. But who knows if it'll continue or not? But that would be what two if they were to make the playoffs again. Two of the past 3 years, mm-hmm. with you could certainly argue top end talent, but not overall playoff squads. And with the way teams roll their lines now, I mean, he'd have to get credit.
Richie,
there.
What's Cody McLeod's Corsi? I want to know what Cody McLeod's Fenwick and Corsi is.
You're just
and the impact
trouble.
That
you're
that's going to
have.
Is.
But do you see? Do you, you're
let me
just,
get my spreadsheet
you're just,
out.
Yeah, you're just trolling people right now. Do you see similarities to the 2013-14 team that won the Central Division?
Well, no, because I mean they were just like what they have 110 yeah. or 109 points that year, something around there. And in reality, without the Tyson Barrie injury, very well could have beat Minnesota in the first round of 7-game series. I don't necessarily see that. I don't think this team is. Maybe is even as good. But I give them credit. I think that when you have his when you look at the way he's put the lines together,
mm-hmm.
I really have to do have to give him credit. You know, it would be easy to split up McKinnon and Duchene. It would.
Sure.
And
especially
both,
with their high Corsi rating.
And they're both so fast, and sometimes you wonder, like, you know, how do you play with them, because they move so quickly. Sometimes it's too hard to adjust. And you have, like, Ginla playing with them right now. I mean, he can't keep up with them, so he's trailing the play all the time. But, yeah, you have Duchene and McKinnon. If they're playing at the same speed, which is kind of hard because very few players can keep up, it's almost impossible to defend. And so that's what you're going to see tonight, is that McKinnon and Duchene are able to turn turnovers in the neutral zone, which most teams are able to take advantage of.
Yes.
But they turn into chances so quickly. Like, McKinnon will go step, shot. You know, and Duchene's a little bit more of a puck handler. Not that McKinnon can't, but the point is like they're able to be so quick about it, and in transition, you have to always be watching them. So he's put them together, and they're in this first wild card spot. So give him credit.
Credit where it's due is right now. If the playoffs were to start, they would certainly be there.
And Drew, to Richie's point, I mean, you got to be careful not only with that top line with Nathan McKinnon and Duchene, and you know whether Landeskog is up there. I believe Jerome Iginla has been up there the last few games at least. Last time there at the MTS Center. Landeskog was on that top line. They really loaded up that top line. But with Soderberg and Blake Como, who I think has been a nice signing. He was on Pittsburgh last year. You know, those top two lines are very good.
But look at it. I mean, after that is, and you could certainly argue Como's not a top six guy there. And then you look at it, and after that, there's a huge drop-off. And I like Alex Tanguay's better days are behind him, though. Yep. You mentioned Cody McLeod. You mentioned a bunch of the guys here, you know, John Mitchell, Jack Skilly.
Retreads for the most part.
Well, it's still a skilled group, though. I mean, there's a drop-off there on the third and fourth line, absolutely. This, compared to the St. Louis Blues or the Dallas Stars, they don't have the depth on the bottom lines. But it's still a group that I think is they're a tough team to defend against, especially, Rich, when you mention in transition. You know, you give them time and space. The Jets, look, the Jets are going to have to be better in their own zone.
The Jets are 11 points behind them. I know there's three-game difference, but there's no reason the Jets should be 11 points behind the Colorado Avalanche if you look at both teams on paper.
And there's a lot of teams the Jets shouldn't be that far behind, right? I mean, the Jets have just not got enough points in the overtime and shootout. They haven't taken enough games, close games. They just haven't gotten those bonus points.
Sure.
In my opinion, I mean, if the Jets, you know, have three or four more points, you know, the conversation is certainly a lot more different. The uphill climb doesn't look as steep, I guess, if you want to say that, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, this Avalanche team, as Rich mentioned, you know, you've got some young defenseman, Chris Bigra, who's been a nice little surprise for them, you know, a top prospect for them. They've still got trouble defending in their own zone. And I wouldn't be surprised if Joey Sakic acquires a defenseman before the trade deadline, because that's really, I think, their weakest spot.
Is that what they would do? Is that what they'd be in the market for, a defenseman, or would they be looking for sort of a depth forward as well at that point?
I think both, frankly. But I don't think you want to sell the farm on the squad because it's not good enough to make a real run.
But they do have some, the top flight talent is an envy of an entire league.
You know, Richie, Colorado might play Chicago in the first round, and I wouldn't like that matchup for
they'd
Colorado.
Be in their own zone for
but
40
I mean,
minutes
you get a hot goalie, and I mean with the firepower,
know.
Right?
Yeah,
so
you never know.
Yeah,
we will see the Jets and the Avs tonight at 9 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, Terry Fry of the Denver Post joins us. Talk a little bit more about the Avalanche. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Terry Fry. Terry covers the Colorado Avalanche for the Denver Post. He's also the author of numerous books, including Save by Roy, Patrick Waugh, and the Return of the Colorado Avalanche. Terry, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Terry.
I'm about to challenge your stick.
Thank you. That's, Marty McSorley, is when we had him on years and years ago, and I'm pretty sure he wasn't that happy when he heard the name of the program. Anyways, Terry, we brought you on to talk, of course, about the Avalanche, the Jets, and the Avs tonight in Denver as they play at 9 o'clock local time here in Winnipeg. We were talking before the break, you know, the similarities between this team and the team from 2013-14 that won the Central Division. Obviously, they're not as good in the standings so far this year, but do you see similarities between those two teams?
They've lost Ryan O'Reilly and Paul Stastny, and that's the major difference. And they still are very thin on defense in the sense of they have had in recent times guys playing for them on defense that should be in the American Hockey League, and they have been unable to really refill and reload within the organization. They're starting to do that now. Chris Bigra is up and playing pretty well. They only have six guys on the roster who are drafted by Colorado, and one of them was Alex Tanguay, who's back for his second term. So Patrick Waugh's first year with Joe Sakic running the operation as general manager was, in retrospect, virtually miraculous. I mean, they were 26-11-4 at home. Same record on the road, same record first half, same record second half. And they got the most they could out of Paul Stastny and Ryan O'Reilly, and they've since lost them, and they're still trying to make up for it. Carl Soderberg is doing a very good job kind of stepping into a little bit of the void. And I think the biggest difference is just that everything went right that year. Semyon Varlamov was terrific in net, and they've just come back to earth a little bit. And they're still trying to fill in with depth in the organization and have four lines and three pairs of defensemen who are NHL-caliber players.
Terry, you mentioned Ryan O'Reilly a couple of times there, and course, he was traded to the Buffalo Sabres, and then coming back the other way was Nikita Zadorov and Mikhail Gregorenko. How would you rate the play of those two players so far this season?
Gregorenko has been everything is advertised, maddening. You know, you look at him and you say, what? You know, there's a lot of talent there. And then you forget he's still only 21 years old, and he's very mature for his age, but he has to, Patrick Waugh keeps preaching, he coached him in major junior at Quebec, that he has to be more, he has to win battles. He has to play harder, and it's maddening. You just see him there. And Zadorov is down at San Antonio now with the premise that at age 20, they want him to play a lot of minutes, and he's been up twice now with the Avalanche and has struggled a little bit. I think it's premature. J.D. Compher is the Michigan captain who was part of the trade and is still playing for the University of Michigan, and they also got a draft choice for it. But right now, I mean, there's no question with Jamie McGinn and Ryan O'Reilly, the trade was so lopsided in favor of Buffalo, but obviously the Avalanche hand was forced. They were just perplexed by Ryan O'Reilly's stance that he should be paid the most on the team, more than Eric Johnson, more than Semyon Varlamov, and more than Matt Duchene, and they were trying to keep somewhat of a structure, and they wanted to avoid losing Ryan O'Reilly for nothing, as happened with Paul Stastny. So the trade was understandable. So far, it's been quite one-sided, but the jury has to still be out.
And Terry, we talked earlier in the season, and we talked last segment about Patrick Waugh. You know, the underlying numbers for the Avs have been well documented, that they've haven't been impressive really in the past couple of years, but they made the playoffs 2 years ago, and right now they're in a playoff spot. How much of that is a testament to Patrick Waugh still getting this team to perform, even though, you know, I guess points-wise in the standings, even though they really don't have a ton of talent after their top guys?
Patrick did such a terrific job in his first year, and you could see every day. I thought the thing that he was not given enough credit for, and to this day has not been given enough credit for, this is not a guy who retired and then expected the NHL to hand him a job. He mm-hmm. coached for 8 years at the major junior level with the Remparts, and he had prefaced that with a two-year kind of sabbatical from being on a bench by watching as the part owner and general manager. And so I thought when he came here, you could see every day the principles of coaching at the major junior level. Now, we all know, of course, that major junior coaches stepping up and coaching the NHL is not unique. But in Patrick's case, it was unique that here was an NHL superstar who took that route and paid his dues for 8 years, and I could see it every day in his first season. And that kind of charm, that newness, that kind of atmosphere wore off a little bit, but I think he's still doing a good job. Dave Farish has stepped in as an assistant this year, and that I think while it's maddening to some people that their style means they try to block shots and they give up a lot of shots and are beaten in the, it's almost stunning some nights the way they're subjecting their goaltender to barrages, and I think that's what's frustrating. But that Patrick Waugh's style has been that it kind of courts that reality, but I think he's still doing a good job.
Is that style, Terry, born out of the fact that's what Waugh thinks they have to do to win because he doesn't have enough guys who can control the puck like McKinnon and Duchene?
Yeah, and they're very, very, very turnover prone in the neutral zone. There's probably been way too much emphasis put on the defense as scapegoats, and it really isn't fair sometimes. But they have had guys out there who didn't belong in the National Hockey League. So it's a combination of all of the above, and even the preference. You know, it's kind of a contradiction. They block so many shots, but the Semyon Varlamov's preference is to see the shot. So it's kind of a maddening contradiction at times, but It does lead to great disparities in shots, and that is what frustrates a lot of people.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Terry Fry is our guest. Terry covers the Avs for the Denver Post. You can also read.
I can't believe I'm endorsing an Illegal Curve. Jeez,
you can also find a lot of Terry's work, all of his number of his different books at terryfry.com. Terry, Semyon Varlamov gets the start in goal for the Avs tonight. His first start since January 23rd. Sort of gone under the radar, but you know he's been involved in the civil lawsuit for the last couple weeks. And, you know, in addition to him being in the courtroom, but Patrick Waugh testified, Gabe Landeskog testified, Greg Sherman, former Avs teammate Patrick Bordalo testified. Are you surprised, sort of a two-part question, one, are you surprised that this has sort of gone under the radar in the, you know, throughout the NHL? And then secondly, was this a distraction at all, or and how impressed were you that the if the Avs were able to sort of compartmentalize everything that was going on at the same time?
No, and yes, they got competent goaltending from Calvin Pickard in the interim, the Winnipeg kid.
Sure.
And they it also was something they knew was coming up. There was a great expectation that it might be settled out of court before going to trial, but they had all their ducks in a row and expected this to be happening. And if folks don't know, the result was that Semyon Varlamov ended up being awarded $126,000 in court costs, which is an effective exoneration.
Sure.
And I think it was a distraction. There's no question about that. But they did, as you say, did a good job of compartmentalizing it and not letting it be destructive in what they were doing. And now the issue is Semyon Varlamov ready to play again tonight? We'll find that out.
Terry, you had a really good piece up on the Denver Post yesterday about Jerome Iginla and Alex Tanguay and how Patrick Waugh is going to put those two players together. Iggy was up with Duchesne and MacKinnon on the top line. But can you talk about the relationship that they share? Because they've played a lot of hockey together dating back to their days with the Calgary Flames.
You can see on the ice when they play together, there's an instinctive understanding of what each of them do. And they don't have to communicate beyond a look or just a knowledge of knowing where each other is going to be. And their situation here has been very interesting. Last year, a lot of the line I used a lot was the good news is Jerome Iginla and Alex Tanguay were their leading goal scorers for much of the year. The bad news is Jerome Iginla and Alex Tanguay were their leading goal scorers for much of the year. You wanted the young guns to step up, take command, take control of the franchise, and be kind of the leaders both on the score sheet and in the room, and that was kind of delayed. The concern now is whether Jerome Iginla and Alex Tanguay's odometers have rolled over, and by putting them back together with John Mitchell, kind of the solid pro in the middle as a center, that might go further to answering the question, because you can't say you're not attempting to facilitate them recovering and providing some punch on the scoreboard by allowing them to play together again. And I'm not going to say it's kind of the last stand for them both. Jerome has 1 year left on his contract. Tanguay's is up, but the issue is whether they have kind of a deep-rooted role in the Avalanche future.
Terry, what's the attention of the team right now? I mean, obviously, Denver Broncos being in the Super Bowl, I must be
garnering. They are?
A lot of attention. How am I, like, you know, the Avalanche, of course, you cover the team in the battles with the Detroit Red Wings. Excuse me. Is there a little bit more of a return to prominence of the Avs there, or are they still trying to carve out a niche for after they were struggling for so long?
Their attendance is about 20th in the NHL, but in my opinion, they're outdrawing the basketball team, the Nuggets, by a substantial margin. And I think the attendance has held up remarkably well under the circumstances. I mean, I look at the price on the tickets of my friends walking around the concourse, and I say, how do you do this? And I'm amazed it's held up as well as it was with every game on television, too. Right. They have a prominence in the Denver market that's underestimated and overlooked by a lot of people. And that run in the late 90s and early 2000s, I think, cemented their prominence. I mean, this is a huge area now for minor hockey. Kids play. There's an arena building boom. Kids are playing when they can afford it. And it's been prime hockey territory here now. You know, I go back as far as being able to compare it to the Colorado Rockies days when Don Cherry, Lanny McDonald and Chico Resch and Barry Beck and Wolf Paymon. And so they kind of got it started. We had a hiatus when the team moved to the browner pastures of New Jersey, but this is prime hockey territory now.
Terry, we'll let you go on this last question. The Jets happened to be playing against the Carolina Hurricanes last night. They play against
nice
the
scheduling, by the way.
Yeah, isn't that a bizarre scheduling? They obviously got the Avs tonight in Denver. Super Bowl prediction.
Carolina 27-13.
Well, okay, there you go. Nobody can accuse you of being a homer there, Terry.
This is not being played in Denver, is it?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, well,
I go back a long time with the Broncos too. I actually moved here as a junior in high school, and my father became the Denver Broncos offensive line coach. And
really?
So I'm from a football family. I will say this, I'll brag a little bit. My father is the only man on the planet who has the World War II Air Medal, which he won 3 times as a P-38 fighter pilot, and two Super Bowl rings, and he won with the Broncos.
Wow. That is certainly quite the accomplishment. Incredible. And, you know, a lot of people here in Canada especially don't know the ties that Pat Bowlen, the Broncos owner, of course, have to Canada, having him, a lot of his formative youth spent in Alberta. He's a member of the Alberta Bar. So a lot of ties between Pat Bowlen and Canada. And he was apparently one of the most vocal owners against any sort of NFL expansion to Toronto because of the affinity he has for the CFL. Am I right on that front, Terry?
Yeah, and Pat, everything you've heard about the affection for Pat as an owner down here is true. I mean, my father worked for him for a lot of years. And so I kind of take a conflict of interest route sometimes, avoiding the kind of the tough stories. But Pat is a terrific owner. His health is not good, as you know, sure. But everything you've heard about the affection for him and the quality of job he has done as an owner here in Denver is all true. I will say that when he originally took over, I think he wanted to implement a rouge and a 55-yard line in the NFL, but they got him talked off at that point.
Terry Fry covers the Colorado Avalanche for the Denver Post. You can see more of his work at terryfry.com. Terry, really appreciate
you. Yeah, the trick there is Terry is TerryFrey.com. I've got seven books there.
There you go, exactly. So catch up on a lot of Terry's fantastic writing. Terry, appreciate your time this morning. Enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy the Super Bowl tomorrow.
Thanks, and I hope the next time you call me, the title of the show is Legal Curve.
For you, it will be. How about that? For you, we'll change the title.
All right.
All righty. Take care, Terry.
30-21 Broncos, Terry.
Thanks very much. It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Terry Fry of the Denver Post for joining us. Didn't know that about his dad. Fantastic, interesting news about his dad as an O-line coach for the Broncos. We'll talk a little bit more about the Super Bowl later on in the show.
Well, I can't believe Terry didn't pick the Broncos. He's in Denver.
That's a pure journalist right there. He's taking off his blinders and he's being, he's looking at the game on paper and he's determining that he thinks that the Panthers are the better of the two franchises.
I think Peyton's going to pull it out. Okay. Broncos.
Save it for the last show. Save it for the last segment.
All right.
Save it for the last segment. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Trade deadline, of course, we mentioned 23 days away, so we'll spend the next 10 or so minutes looking at some trade rumors from around the NHL. We mentioned the New York Rangers earlier, but that was more along the lines of about Andrew Ladd. Kevin Klein, you mentioned, Richie, he fractures his thumb this week. He's out indefinitely. What is the impact on the Rangers' plans there on the back end? Does that impact them trading or not trading Keith Yandel as a result of losing Kevin Klein indefinitely?
Well, yeah, I mean, how many more players can you... I mean, if you deal Keith Yandel, what are you getting back? If you want to go sell Girardi, McDonough, and who? McElrath or Boyle? I mean, you can't just deal Yandel without getting something in return on the back end. That's why when you talk, you can talk about Andrew Ladd, but I think the need is on the back end there, especially with all these Yandel rumors. I think the Yandel rumors are also very much born out of the fact that he's got that low cap hit of the 2.6 there. That because Arizona's eaten that salary.
Sure.
And I mean, if he didn't have that, would he be as desirable? I don't know. I mean, isn't he desirable to the Rangers also because he has that cap hit? And if you traded that much for him, and I realize Gorton's in charge now in Auckland, Sather, although Gorton certainly had, power before Sather went further upstairs. But like, if you didn't like, if you, clearly, you, I guess you can't sign him now. Like, what was the long-term goal there? It just seems kind of a bit of a mess right now.
You know, I should correct you, Drew. Our good friend Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record just tweeted, Kevin Kline's actually going to play today.
What? He went from being out indefinitely with a fractured thumb to playing?
He's going to be in for Dylan McIlrath, so he's going to be in the lineup for the Rangers today.
I actually don't, to be honest with you, I still think they have a need on the back end.
Well, Kevin Kline's a
they probably have a need up front,
a five,
too.
Six
they probably
for them.
Have both. Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, that's fair, is he? Well, I mean, what are you... if Yandel's going out, you need somebody else going in your top four. And if Yandel's not going out, then I guess you can look to addressing your forward group. And I don't think that's a mistake. You just wonder what it's going to cost and how much more of the future they can trade. They're in a weird spot right now. They thought they'd be in a better position right now than they are.
Well, there you have it. Kevin Kline back in the Rangers lineup. He went from out indefinitely, you know, 2 days ago to being back healthy. So that was a quick turnaround there. In Ottawa, Jared Cowan is, you know, been rumored to be on the trade block really for a number of months, years at this point in time. Ian Mendez of TSN expects that it will happen this time prior to the February 29th trade deadline. You know, Jared Cowan, it seems like he's a guy who's in need of a new city to maybe get his game back, and his time has just run out there in the nation's capital.
Yeah, and he's still very young, guys. I mean, he was drafted by the Senators, obviously, and he's been developed by the Senators, and he's a guy that I like, Rich. He's a little bit limited offensively, but a big guy. He can skate. You know, he's not the best skater, but he can move, and he's very physical. He can drop the gloves, and obviously he's fallen out a favor there a little bit, and, you know, he's been buried a little bit behind some defensemen. But, I mean, you talk about defensive depth. If you're a team, I mean, LA Kings, they could use a Jared Cowan on their team. I mean, I'm just throwing out a team, you know, who's maybe looking to acquire a defenseman. Before the trade deadline, a guy that you put him out there as your fifth, sixth defenseman, I would be very confident with Jared Cowan on the back end. And unfortunately for the Ottawa Senators, they've just been so inconsistent this year. I think, you know, depending on what happens here over the next couple of weeks, they'll probably be a seller before the trade deadline.
You watch them play and they get dominated by Edmonton and you know, Erik Karlsson's kind of poor defensive play. You wonder where that team's going. And what they are. Like, what are they?
Sure. It's probably a conversation we had about this time last year before they went on their ridiculous
Richie,
run.
A lot of good young forwards.
Yeah, and, not great, know, though. Good, but not great.
Right, and they've obviously got the best defenseman in the NHL, and Erik Karlsson.
The best offensive defenseman in the NHL.
Right, I should qualify that, because I don't want to offend your boy Drew Doughty or my boy Shea Weber, but, I mean, when you're talking about the Ottawa...
wow.
You and I disagree on that one.
Well...
but we save that for off the air.
Well, I think that people might want to hear about that.
Izzy's a bigger fan of Shea Weber. I don't think Shea Weber is as good as he once was. I know that may be controversial.
He's top 10 in the league in scoring.
Yeah, I don't think he's in that same conversation as Drew Doughty and those guys. But certainly, I'm sure there's more than a few people who disagree with me.
Well, his shot isn't going to disagree
with you.
His
shot's great, yeah.
But you look at the team and Mika Zibanejad and, you know, Mark Stone and Kyle Turris has done an excellent job there, coming over from the Coyotes. And, you know, Bobby Ryan's had a very underrated season. A lot of good forwards there, but I agree with you, Rich. This is a team in the Eastern Conference that is kind of middling.
Well, we talk about it. We talked about it with Dean Brown. Is he like, there are a lot of comparisons with the Jets here.
Sure.
I think so. And Dave Cameron's done an excellent job there. He certainly deserved the contract that he got after he came in for Paul McLean last year. And excellent goaltending. I mean, it's a team that you look at and you could say, this team could easily make the playoffs, but they could easily miss the playoffs. Just because they don't have that depth and they don't have that top-end talent, especially on forward.
I mean, I just see a lot of similarities. I mean, how you have your young talent, you have offensively inclined defensemen who kind of lead the way. You don't really, like, the identity is kind of lost a bit. Last year you made the playoffs and people thought you could win your first round. You didn't win your first round. You know, you have your Scheifele, Zibanejad. Karlsson, Byfuglien, the new coaches came in fairly recently, Cameron and Maurice. You don't spend a ton of money. I see a lot of similarities.
You just outlined the similarities quite well. Moving to
Buffalo. You have to pay Hoffman. You're going to have to pay Scheifele.
Sure.
I can keep going.
Sure. Moving to Buffalo, we're talking about him in the last segment in the interview with Terry Fry. Jamie McGinn is an unrestricted free agent at season's end. He's got 11 goals, 11 assists for 22 points right now. Sabres doesn't seem like they've reached out to try and sign him at this point in time. What could Jamie McGinn?
Why don't you read Tim Murray's quotes? He actually says things about the negotiations.
No. I refuse to believe that a general manager actually says something that's quotable.
Yeah, he actually says, you know, we're reaching out to him. His contract demands might not be in the ballpark of what we think is reasonable, and he very well could be asking his way kind of salary-wise out of town is essentially what he says, but he's being fair but unreasonable. And to be honest, Jamie McGinn has been a good soldier for them, and he's played well. But, I mean, do they want to pay more of a checking line depth forward, more than a respectable checking line depth forward, the money that it's going to take?
Now, Rich, if I'm the Buffalo Sabres, I want to sign Jamie McGinn. I'm a big fan of Jamie McGinn. When he was on the Colorado Avalanche and he missed most of the year last year with the Colorado Avalanche. He missed a lot of games last year. And previous to that, he kind of had his breakout year with the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, two years ago. He only played 19 games last year. 2 years ago, he had 38 points.
And Rich mentions, you know, on a good team, he's a third liner. But he's a guy that he's got a scoring touch, you know, kind of grinding forward. And for a team, again, that is looking to kind of bolster, you know, the bottom six, hey, maybe the Avalanche try to get him back. Like, honestly, like, Jamie McGinn was a player that obviously Tim Murray wanted included in that Ryan O'Reilly trade. But if I'm the Sabres, I want to keep him. I think. I'm a big Jamie McGinn fan.
I do have the quotes here. This is Tim Murray. He was on WGR radio for a regularly scheduled interview that he has there. Quote, everybody was tweeting, Murray, get him signed. He loves Buffalo. We've asked what their thoughts are on term and on money. We've given them our thoughts on term. So if we can do something that suits both parties, we will try. And if we can't, again, depending on these 3 weeks, how the team does, I don't want to have a player leave here without getting anything back. Continuing on, quote, he's played well for us, Tim Murray said about Jamie McGinn. Besides playing well and scoring, I like his approach to the game. I like his on-ice and off-ice demeanor and approach. I think he has personality and cojones that we like in some of our players. If we could get a deal done, that would be great. But then we might be offering now, based on comparables, might not be realistic deal because we know when guys like him are so close to July 1st that his comparables today will go out the door on July 1. We might be talking two different languages here, but we're talking.
Well,
that's
again,
Tim Murray on Jamie McGinn, pending unrestricted free agent.
Right, and again, I mean, Tim Murray thought highly enough of him, and clearly, based on those comments, thinks highly enough of him. But he included Jamie McGinn in the trade, right? He said to Joe Sakic, I mean, you got to throw in Jamie McGinn. And again, Rich, he's not a first liner. He's not going to be a player that's going to completely razzle and dazzle you. But he's a guy that will contribute in your lineup. And he's a guy that they like, everyone seems to like in the locker room. Mm-hmm. And he has that scoring touch. I mean, you said mentioned it, you know, he's on pace for 15, 16 goals, whatever it is this year. And the Buffalo Sabres are maybe looking at their season and saying, you know, well, does he factor in, considering they have all of these young forwards that, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line are going to be entering their second contracts. But I'll take him on my team any day of the week.
One more player before we head to break. That's Mikael Bodker of the Arizona Coyotes. He's a pending unrestricted free agent. He's got 13 goals, 22 assists for 35 points in 52 games this season. This is a guy who, you know, he's making $3.75 million this year. He's only, you know, 27 years old. He'll be 27 next December. Young guy, going to hit unrestricted free agency. This is an interesting, I think this guy's got a lot of appeal to a lot of teams throughout the league.
Yeah, he's young and he can score and he can skate and he can handle the puck. He's a very skilled player. I mean, is he probably more well-suited to that second-line wing role and scoring role? Yeah, for sure. But how often do young players like that with that scoring ability come available for the price of simply cash? Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Drew. I think he would be a very appealing player. I still think the Coyotes find a way to get it done there, though.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk to George Sipple of the Detroit Free Press about Kyle Connor. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.